It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours. Like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire and talk about it. Thank you once again for listening to the world's only The Wire podcast. The Wire, a show about how snitches really do get stitches. It's true.
Sometimes they have to get 200 and the muscles in their face don't work right.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they wind up. She wasn't a snitch, though, was she? Anyway, I don't think she was ahead of us, aren't we?
Yes. Let's not get ahead of what this episode is. Let's tease it out as long as possible, because if there's one thing our listeners love, it's when we don't talk about The Wire. Five stars in a review, please. We've gotten some nice new reviews recently, I would like more of them. I would like them as soon as possible. Also, and I'm sorry, I want to apologize up front to everybody who's been complaining about how I have made every pre-roll ad me saying, please come to my show October 17th at the Punchline. But you know what? Until that show happens, that's going to be the pre-roll ad.
He didn't vet it with me, you guys. I didn't. You know.
I don't run things by him. Because his answer is always, yeah, I don't care. He doesn't care.
Better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. That's what
they say. Yeah. And sometimes not even forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So please come. It's me and Francesca. That's my wife. And we're going to do stand up, and it's going to be really fun. Vince will be there.
So I'm taking you don't need the pre-roll on this.
It's going in.
Okay. So you're double promoing
in case they skip through it. All right. Okay. It's important to me.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about from season 4 of The Wire, episode 4, Refugees. And our guest today is fantastic. He is a professor at Princeton University. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, our guest is Kevin Cruz.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Oh, so glad to have you. I don't think we have ever had a professor on.
Am I making a horrible mistake?
I mean,
medium. I need that McNulty gif. Right now.
Yeah, I know. And this is the episode in which that happened.
Yeah.
No, most of our guests are people who like their credits are like, I'm going to be a chuckle fucky. In October. I mean, they're basically different versions of me, or they're like podcasters, which is like even a lower form of life.
Don't sell short LP and Max Collins.
That's true. Occasionally, we do have very famous rock stars on, and I don't know why. I don't know why they choose to come on. And for the same reason, why I'm like a Princeton professor. Well, okay, let's do this.
Vince and I lost a bet. It was, we don't need to go into the details, but that's why I'm here. It's good.
That's fair. So do you, as a Princeton professor, do you teach a class about The Wire?
I do not teach a class about The Wire, but I've taught urban history before. Oh. And actually we had David Simon come to Princeton, probably 15 years ago.
Wow. Hmm.
Nutter was the mayor of Philadelphia. He came with him. So yeah, whenever that was, wow. But it was great. We had a nice talk about the show and talking about urban studies. It was really great.
That's
really
awesome. Smart.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I only know him as the guy on Twitter who argues with everyone and calls people shitbirds, which I love personally.
He's like a character from Deadwood.
Yeah.
And the ability in which he can coin kind of really intricate and fantastic profanity.
Yes.
It's impressive.
I know it keeps him up at night, and that's what I appreciate about him. Because I know he's sitting there in his bed.
Working
some
on
idiot said something, like one guy on Twitter said something that set him off, and now he's in bed trying to think of like the best insult to come up with.
And he pulls it off. I mean, most of the time I'm just like, that was a really fancy way of calling someone an asshole. And
right.
I mean, you know, that's why he's a writer, mm-hmm. you know, that's what writers do.
It's a gift. Yeah.
It really is a gift. But Kevin, do you like The Wire?
I love The Wire. Well, it's a happy coincidence given that that's what you're talking about on this podcast.
I know. I was going to say, that's perfect.
What are the odds? One of my favorite shows. It's a brilliant drama, but also kind of socially smart, digs into issues that don't often get discussed in politics, much less in primetime TV. So huge fan.
Yeah. And as someone who's a teacher, I imagine that season 4 probably resonates with you, maybe more so because it is, you know, in a way talking about your own profession. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, a little. I mean, I teach college. I teach kids who have clawed their way to get there and want to be in my class and are dying. I'm not prez in the classroom trying to corral a bunch of kids who don't want to be there, right? There's no cutting.
You don't have to take gum off of desks and break up razor blade fights at Princeton.
And there's no Cuddy kind of going around Central New Jersey rounding up, you know, truant Princeton students and forcing them to go to my class, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't profess to have, the people who are in the trenches in elementary schools and in high schools across the country are really doing God's work. I live a life of luxury compared to that. So, education is certainly a drive here, but very different worlds.
Yeah. They're doing God's work. You, as a college professor, you're doing Satan's work.
Yeah.
Because
teaching, my training.
You're teaching Marxism to the future communists.
That's
no one's going to hear this, right? Yes, that's true. Yes.
No one's going to hear this. No one listens.
He pumps them up to, what was it, Attack and Dethrone God? I'm trying to remember what
it was. Attack and Dethrone God. That's right. That was...
It's all laid out in our five-year plan. It's on the university's website. Mm-hmm.
Part of the five-year plan, collectivize farms, Attack and Dethrone God, and also, make students read about sex works.
Make them do gender all the time.
Always doing gender.
Gender.
Gotta talk about gender. These wokes. You get it. Mm-hmm. God, we would make so much money if we could just be that podcast, Vince.
Think about
the Thiel bucks. Peter Thiel, he would give us all that money. Do you have a favorite season of The Wire?
It's like ranking my children.
Mm.
I'm supposed to say I love them all, and yet we all have a favorite.
That's true.
I would probably say season 3.
Season 3, okay.
Just because that arc of the, you got Muzzone, you got Omar, mm-hmm. Stringer, kind of all circling around each other, all those parts in play.
Yeah.
I'd say 3.
Yeah. Okay. 3 is very good. I enjoy 3 as well. What are your thoughts on season 5? Are you an anti-5 person? Are you someone who doesn't like...
They only made 4 seasons.
God damn it. No, they made 5. And the 5th one's actually good.
Five is solid. I feel like Simon knew too much about the newspaper industry.
Yes.
And leaned in with that maybe a little too much over his skis. It's been forever since I've watched it. It was a bit of a letdown. I mean, I was happy Clark Johnson's in that, who's brilliant. I was thrilled to see him come back.
Oh, yeah.
The kind of homeless serial killer plot was a little...
It's a bit much, but I feel like that season was just... that was for anyone who's ever gotten annoyed at the kinds of things and people who win journalism awards. Like, that is the basis of season 5. And you're like, he didn't say shit. He really just did a tourism thing. And that's painfully accurate in my experience, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like season 5, we always have to defend it. I think it's universally considered to be the worst season of The Wire. And I think everyone's wrong because, it's really about how like a drunk Irishman can really get away with some amazing evil schemes.
Yeah.
It was like Booze was McNulty's spinach and he was Popeye. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. He drank and he said, I'm going to invent a serial killer.
It's about how the best cops are the drunkest.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
as we all know,
we all do know that. Final question. Is Princeton's a really good school, right?
I mean, you know, we're regionally known in New Jersey, at central New Jersey. People.
Okay. All right. So it's like a good school for New Jersey.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. That's what I thought.
I mean, it's an okay school for New Jersey.
Okay. All right. We're bumping it up to okay. Well, that's good. That's good. But this isn't a podcast about ranking various local academic institutions. No, this is a podcast about The Wire. And we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you pod. You just got in. Pod. Well, I beg you. Pod. Podcast. If you podcast. Jesus. School children. Season 4.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, once again today, we're going to be talking about from Season 4 of The Wire, Episode 4, Refugees. Now, this episode premiered October 1st, 2006. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Yeah, you keep not writing these, but I'll just
I
do
want
this
you to do it off the top of your
off
head.
Top. Right. Przybylowski is trying to figure out how to talk to his kids after a violent incident. Marlowe is pondering joining Prop Joe's co-op. Mm-hmm. And Omar, the wire is done. And Omar is trying to figure out who to rob next.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's good. I like it. It's solid. That's what the episode's about. But Vince, more importantly, mm-hmm. what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. And I'm sure a historian knows this better than anyone. But, you know, we can't evaluate art divorced from its cultural context. And therefore, we got to put some of that context back in. And we do that with a little something that we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day. Machine tells the tale, son.
Yeah. All right, we're going all the way back to October 1st, 2006.
That's right.
I like going back and seeing like the political scandals that were like the hugest deal at that point.
Sure.
Because it's really, it's amazing how fast you forget what the actual political scandals were, even from, I don't know, what is it, 17 years ago?
Yeah, you mean back in like normal times?
Normal times.
I mean, you know, normal except for the whole war on terror and the 9/11 sure, and all that stuff sure. going on.
You remember that, you remember the Mark Foley scandal?
Sounds familiar. What? Tell me about it.
I did not. House Republicans knew for months that Representative Mark Foley of Florida was exchanging what were described as over-friendly emails with a 16-year-old former House page, they acknowledged Saturday.
Whoa.
Foley resigned Friday after news reports revealed that he had sent another male teenager, former House page, messages that were explicitly sexual. House leaders said they had not been aware of those messages.
I vaguely remember. Do we know what the messages said? I want to know how sexy they were.
We go, hold on.
I'm not sure sexy is the word you want to use here. But,
oh, okay.
I mean, unless you're looking for a date with Chris Hansen from Dateline. But
yeah.
We're talking young. Okay.
In one 16-year-old. In one exchange, Foley asked, "You and your boxers too? Well, strip down and get relaxed."
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's hard to believe that Dennis Haster would let all this go.
Yeah,
given his spotless record,
he's usually he's had a zero tolerance policy for that.
Oh wait,
kind
no,
of
I'm,
stuff,
I'm right? reading here. He was referred to as a serial child rapist. Oh, I'm sorry. So he might have had a reason not to look at this.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
It's kind of amazing that they just sort of forgot about that whole thing and then made like groomers an insult. Yeah. And it was like, you guys were literally running like a sex abuse
groomer factory
out of the out of Congress. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a weird bit of projection that is so blatant that you even feel weird pointing it out because you're like, is this part of it? Is this part of your weird, twisted fantasy? Is me bringing up the fact that this is clearly projection? Just like how it's like every single time I see someone do a deep dive into a like a power Twitter account that only talks about groomers, someone will eventually find an article in which it turned out that they are, on work release from prison for doing pedophilia. And I'm just like, why is it? Why every time you make it so obvious?
Well, I mean, it's just so ironic that
your brain explodes.
The person that's going to blow the lid off of the pedophilia conspiracy at the highest levels just happened to come from 8chan, a website explicitly for pedophiles.
No,
it's always the person you suspect the most.
Exactly.
That's what I thought about Russell Brand. I was like, oh man,
right? Yeah, what a shock. Yeah.
He was hiding in plain sight there. You know,
who knew? Everyone knew. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, apparently everyone. And I'm glad that we're finally at the point with Russell Brand where collectively everyone can just be like, can we re-examine his whole act? It's just chimney sweep says big words. That's all it is. It's just like, well, you know, what if a chimney sweep was just like, oh, you know, I think we need to ponder whether or not the veracity of these claims. It's just like, I get it. You're a chimney sweep, but
it's a good
sound
bit, though.
Smart.
You have to give him credit.
It's a fun bit, but how long can it last? You know what I'm saying? It's
apparently about 12, 13 years.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Elsewhere in 2006 news, there's this Obama guy, and
he seems
to have actual charisma, and people are kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
This headline from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette feels a little borderline, but headline, borrowing Obama's magic.
A little magical. Yep.
Don't say, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
one thing for Ben Cardin to It's one thing for Ben Cardin to joke about his charisma deficit. Who says I'm not flashy? He quips in a campaign commercial. It's quite another for him to invite Mr. Democratic Charisma himself on stage for a rally in his quest to become U.S. Senator from Maryland.
Mm.
I don't remember if this guy won or not. Barack Obama did. He did. Okay, there we go. See, that's why we have
this is why we got a historian on.
Barack Obama didn't even have to open his mouth to have a crowd of a few hundred under a powerful spell in a grassy outdoor amphitheater in the University of Maryland in suburban College Park. The junior senator from Illinois, part Kenyan, part Kansan, stood tall and youthful in bronze in a black suit and a baby blue tie, his eyes half closed, studying the audience with a kind of seductive lassitude. His arrival sparked an ovation, and he shot a quick, amiable wink to the many polls and hopefuls crammed behind him on the stage, mute witnesses to the magic. Damn, that is...
That's well,
he likes,
well written.
I think he likes them.
Yeah.
You know, Seductive Lassitude is actually the name of my erotic fiction.
Yeah, that was the name...
Oddly, I do not have a publisher. In fact, I have several restraining letters for publishers.
Random House. Back the fuck off, Cruz!
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. You know, and I gotta say, hired goons were not needed. That's a step too far. You can just say no.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, just simple no would do.
Yeah, it's weird.
Elsewhere, across the pond, I always like to finish off with a fun story.
Sure.
This is my fun story for the week. British police are no longer allowed to call young people yobs.
Yobs?
Which, yeah, that's the thing. They are menacing youths who hang about in gangs, causing trouble. For decades, they have been known as yobs. It has been rare for anybody to have a good word to say about them. But now, it seems, police officers are going to have to find a way more, or have to find a polite way to describe the nation's troublemakers, because Scotland Yard has banned its officers from using the word yob for fear that it might alienate young people. The edict has the backing of Sir Ian Blair, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, and will gird his reputation as the PC PC.
There we go. All right. Very good.
They took our jobs.
They took our jobs.
This was when it happened.
That's interesting. I guess I wouldn't have heard a British slang term only used by police, but still, that is new. What is that, like young knobs? What is it?
Can we get
some etymology on yobs, please?
I don't know what that one is.
Oh, these dang yobs.
It's probably some weird Cockney rhyme that you have to skip 12 words back to figure out what it was.
Yeah, exactly. There's just to follow the thread of where yobs came from is just a chore in and of itself.
Yeah.
But no, we can no longer call them yobs. We have to just call them ragamuffins, as per usual.
This is pre-chavs, I think.
Now they
can just call them chavs.
Now they call them chavs. But chav is a very specific type of British youth, right?
It's a
white guy.
Thank you. Yes.
It's like a white and wearing a Supreme hoodie and not quite like football hooligan, but also not quite yob. You know what I mean?
I find they're filled with a seductive lassitude.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say the same thing. A seductive lassitude, yeah. See, there he is. There's Russell Brand. Yeah. That's his whole thing.
That's about 90% of it. The other 10% is kind of an open shirt.
Yeah, right. Open shirt. And then
People forget he had a little dreadlock in the back of his hair when he first came out. Yeah, he had like one weird dread that was back there before he cut it off.
You know what he did? He made being sober, as a sober person, I'm always looking for sober icons. But he made being sober look so lame that I felt like it was worse for the world. You know, it was just like, I might be sober, but I'm still very fucky. And it's like, yeah, okay. Stop making it weird. It's just like, it's everyone's different. Why you gotta make it? Oh, but I'm fucky and I don't drink. It's like, yeah, but you're clearly a sexual predator. Anyways.
So that's been the back in the day machine.
Okay, so that's everything. Now we finally are contextualized.
That's right.
And we can know why this episode happened. It's very important.
It explains why Randy gets called a yob. I mean,
that's
now...
right. It explains why everyone's just calling Randy yob the whole time. Mm-hmm. So this week, due to circumstances, including me at one point having COVID and, I don't have a song. So I'm going to have
usually has a song.
I usually have a really great parody song
for the new listeners,
and everyone loves
know.
It. But you know what? At some point in this episode, I'll probably think of one, or you guys will tell me one. And then at the end of the episode, I will, once this recording's over, I'll tack it on at the end. But in lieu of having a song, instead, I'm going to play something that I found on someone sent it to me on TikTok. It is What If Biggie Was From Baltimore?
I have not heard this. I'm excited.
You haven't heard it? It's very good. So I'm going to play a little bit of that for you. Here we go. It's all good for it was all I earned. I used to read Juneau Fuckle Utes. Jickle Yangers up on my jickle when I fuckle Utes. Fuckle using on my urn. Juice now, Jones now, bird phone, jickle on my Utes. I used to jickle up to my jickle hop. Fuck alone goons, I burst now, the goose knots, goo jigger. I fuckle Utes, sell a bone, Jones now, fella the goose now, but jiggle. Remember fuckle Utes and jickle highs. You never thought that goo high would jickle this high. Fuckle on my goose now. All right, I think I get it.
I used to eat crab chips on the machine.
That's good too. But
that was horrible. But good, go.
I liked it. I just very much enjoy the idea that everybody outside of Baltimore finds the accent atrocious. I just very much enjoy that. Anyways, let's finally.
Are there any regional New Jersey accents that the rest of the world has yet to discover?
No, not really. I mean, we're. There's the Northern Jersey Sopranos one, which I believe you're probably a little familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Central New Jersey just is kind of there.
Yeah.
It's not really, not quite Northern Jersey. It's just kind of a Atlantic.
Sure.
Yeah.
It would be nice to know if there was a rival accent somewhere in America that sounded as weird as Baltimore, just because I feel like Baltimore right now stands alone. I mean, I guess maybe Maine people like a weird Maine accent.
Yeah.
I discovered the one time I went to Rhode Island that everyone talks like Peter Griffin. That was wild. that's a real accent. That's not just a cartoon character.
I mean, I feel like the
sports radio is where you'll find all the Peter Griffins talking to each other.
That's all the best regional accents are in sports radio. But I feel like there is a funny regional accent that's hot that shifts. Like early 2010s, I would say it was like Boston area, and then as soon as Mayor of Easton hit, it was like, okay, now it's like Delco Baltimore sort, which is similar.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next one's going to be. I'm thinking, I'm saying maybe Yinzer or.
I think Fetterman can make that happen.
Yeah.
If anyone can. Yeah, that would be sick. I mean, the Yinzer accent is, as far as I know, is just, it's weird. Pennsylvania, is that what that is? Like, what is, how do you do Yinzer? What's the.
Wooder, I think, is like the defining.
Wooder? Gene Wooder?
It sounds, I don't know. I'm not like a scholar on the Yinzer accent. I know it sort of has similarities with Baltimore and Delco, but I think there's more like soft consonants, like D's, T's as D's, and
The point is some
whenever Mike McCarthy, the Cowboys coach, talks, I'm like, oh, that's what a Yinzer accent sounds like.
But yeah. Let's talk about the episode. Let's dig in. Let's get deep on it.
Let's do it.
Vince, what did you think of this episode?
Great episode. I could have done, I mean, if I'm being honest, I could have done with a little less homicide department hazing. It was okay. It was
You're
fine.
Wrong.
I think this is, you know, the Wire always does lots of societal analysis and intense realism, but as this episode shows, it's also doing a lot of like TV stuff. Like this episode is all foreshadowing, and it's all David Simon's love of symmetry with poker on both sides, and also like the brotherhood of the traveling ring, which was kind of fun.
Yeah,
It's almost like it's almost like an alternate universe Seinfeld episode. The way they have a little MacGuffin that goes from storyline to storyline.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you didn't like the hazing?
I didn't dislike it. I thought I could have done with like less of it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Kevin, did you enjoy this episode?
Yeah, I think the hazing is probably the least favorite part too. Like it felt like we've seen Greg's go through the motions. She doesn't need to be kind of treated like a rookie entirely.
It does feel weird to haze her when she has been shot in the line of duty.
You know what it is? I think it's like these people are so lewd most of the time. Like Landsman is normally like the most lewd, crude guy in the world. One of the hazing is them like putting a fake note in a dead guy's hand, which is wild. But then the other one is having her call the zoo as Mr. Lion, which seems like very, very like polite 1950s compared to the normal things that you expect from the homicide.
Even the zookeeper says, aren't you too old for this? I mean, it's a stupid kid's prank.
Yeah.
I think personally, that's what makes it amazing is number one, it's a ramp up. That's why the Mr. Lion thing works for me is because you start off with this really juvenile prank in which they have Kima, her first act as a newly christened homicide detective is to deal with a methane probe. I have a clip of that prank.
I need to speak with Mr. Lion about the protocols.
You sound a little old for this, hon.
Excuse me? Who is this? This is Detective Greggs with
the Baltimore City Zoo.
Fine. And this is Detective Greggs.
And you're calling
I'm sorry. I misdialed.
Methane bro.
See, I find that to be cute and light and sure. and fun.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know, and then quickly it ramps up to an entire scene in which they first of all, they plant a note on a dead guy. They have to find a man has to be dead in order to do yeah. the second prank.
Now, yes. are we led to believe that did Bunk and Freeman kill that guy for the prank?
Yeah.
It's hard to know. It really is hard to know because
like you imagine some grieving mother just screaming like out on the outside of the police line.
Why? Well, it was for a great gag.
It was
and then they're all laughing their asses off. Like, no, we put a note in his hand that said Tater killed me. Get it? Because she's new and we're just fucking with her. It's pretty funny if you're on this side.
Yeah, no, I get why you'd be upset, ma'am, but you have to consider the feelings of the rest of Homicide laughing their ass off.
Comedy's hard, ma'am. Suck it up.
The craziest thing about other than, of course, them having a dead guy to put a note into is also the opening of that scene. It's like this is supposed to be Kima's first time as a homicide detective, like seeing what it looks like to investigate a murder. And it is like almost word for word. It feels like they're just doing CSI. They're just doing a Law and Order, you know, like procedural. And the joke is, of course, we don't do any of this shit when we find a body. We don't do any analysis. We don't have Q-tips. We don't, you know, we don't do blood spatter. We just go there and we go, oh, fuck. I gotta figure this shit out. Like, it is kind of insane to me that the joke is that the Baltimore Police Homicide Unit does not have the ability to solve this murder in a way they would on TV, which... I don't know. It's a great joke.
I want to know how you become the like junk science crime analysis guy. Because like, wasn't all that blood spatter basically revealed to be just kind of junk science and similar with
I didn't know a lot
of the ballistics was not as accurate as they were led to believe. And that just leads me to believe that they're were like five really weird guys who spent all day just like... dropping liquids on paper. I don't really even know how you get to be
Were they all Dexter? Were they all really serial killers themselves? Yeah.
Probably. They were just like, I just really like Jackson Pollock paintings and I had to figure out a way to make this my job. So I told people that this is how blood spatter works and we locked up a lot of innocent people, but it was worth it.
My vocation is my vacation.
Whenever there is like a high tech police technology that's used, to convict people of crimes. At this point, I am now always suspicious that it is a junk science because there's just so much of it that has been proven to be false. Much of the like early introduction of like DNA evidence into cases and court filings has been proven to be like total crap. Like people didn't actually know what they were doing, but they were like, yeah, you know, these bloods are similar bloods. Now I think, you know, DNA might actually be a useful tool.
You're willing to grant them that?
It is begrudging because of the fact that everything else is fake. Like polygraphs are fake. I mean, fucking expert witnesses are fake. It's all fake. It's all people just like who are, you know, a part of the machine of prosecution. And we all are just like, well, if the expert said that this is how a serial killer sits. Who am I to judge?
Right.
He's a body language expert.
The body language experts are the best.
He understands the language of the body. I mean, you gonna argue with that? Not me.
Your Honor, his hips don't lie. I rest my case.
Oh.
So I like, well, there was that guy that that claimed to have an affair with Obama, and I guess the thing was that Tucker Carlson touted the fact that he had taken a polygraph test, and then other people pointed out, it's like, oh, he actually failed the polygraph test.
But he took
I'm like, you guys are both missing the point, is that polygraph tests are not real, and they don't tell you anything.
They're complete and utter bullshit. It is not a...
We're not on Maury. Like, have you not...
They're such bullshit that they are no longer admissible in court. Like,
they never were.
True? Oh, that's very funny, because it is something that, you know, that has been used constantly as like a threat against... suspects forever.
This was just taken, I mean, the Wire, in an early Wire episode, there's Landsman using the copy machine, which he says is a lie detector test, and that's funny, but also, like, it is about the same as a polygraph test. Like, they're not much. It's
the same principle, which is that we're gonna use a science machine to scare people into doing false confessions, or into, you know, doing a confession, which is you know, hey, the law works in mysterious ways.
Which is why it's great that Bunk and Company don't do any of that stuff. They go back. It's like that John Mulaney routine about crimes in the 30s.
Yeah, right.
Oh, the cover left a lot of blood here. Ah, oh, gross. Mop it up.
Yeah, no. I guess to their credit, them not doing any of that is probably... a good thing, because that's
the show's
lies anyway.
Credit, like, they never really they never tip you off to the fact that all that CSI stuff is fake. Like, they give you little hints like that it's fake, but it's not. There's no, they never really tip their hand to explain that that's what they were doing. Which
I mean, that's right, but that's what makes the scene so good, in which Kima is being pranked. She's being pranked into thinking that the Baltimore homicide unit has like secret ways of doing stuff that help you catch crime, and it's like half the prank is like, psych, turns out we don't know shit. And I have a clip of that.
Puts the time of death at 7:48, give or take.
Noted.
You're gonna want to get a chemstat,
you think?
Couldn't hurt.
CDC 2, splatter distance?
Yeah, definitely. You know, where the hell did my Q-tips go?
Don't sweat it, I got mine right here.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. You want to take a look? Won't bite.
The joke is that they're competent and prepared. That's the prank.
There's something in his hand.
Oh, yeah?
Tater killed me.
Oh. Is it a type? Because that would hold up a lot better in court. Phone number in other hand.
I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think every part about that prank is great, on not just on a level of like within the show, but outside of the show, watching it going, oh man, this show really does give you an inside look into like both Ed Burns and David Simon's like time with the police, in which they realize like anything you see on TV in which people are very seriously walking around a body trying to analyze and use science and technology in order to figure out the crime, all of that is fake. Only in pranks do they do that. That is kind of scary. I hope I'm never murdered, guys.
Yeah, that would be bad. But they use that all as setup for the
final prank,
that the mayor's race, the tight mayor's race, is the shit's going to roll downhill until eventually they're going to try and stall an investigation by putting the rookie on it, which is an interesting choice. Is that really going to stall the investigation? But it's all carried out at a wink wink level of, we can't really tell you to do the exact thing that we want you to do.
Right.
We just sort of have to like sort of nudge you and
They can't say they're actively impeding an investigation into the death of a state's witness. All they can do is show you that they're doing that by trying to assign a rookie.
But of course, the homicide captain at one point says, "I promise I'll slow this down," and Burrell, you know, Yeah. You can't don't say it. You know?
Yeah. He's like, whoa, calm down. Let's not.
Do you find historical basis for this type of, like, is corruption this understated? Like, is this normal for it to sort of go down in this way where they don't want to say it so that it doesn't come back on them? Or is this?
No, I mean, usually there's an ineptitude, but with most city police departments, it's that they want more arrests and they're just not getting them. Mm-hmm. It's rare you see someone wanting to kind of slow walk a crime.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it seems like a very specific scenario, you know, in which you're slow walking a crime in order to keep it out of the news cycle, which is also very of its time, right, as well, because I at this point, I think we are so, I don't know, immune to a bad headline when it comes to politicians or police forces that that no one fears them anymore. Like, there's this what is it, the sheriff's department in this one small county in fucking, what is it, Kansas or whatnot, where they are actively hounding
raided the newspaper office.
They raided the newspaper office. Yeah. They raided the home of, like, the editor, and then the grandma died. Like, like, they're doing, and there's been calls for them to resign, and no one's resigning because
they kept it out of the news, which is important.
As long as it's out of the news.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reigning theory of like how to keep people from getting mad about a thing, it used to be like keep it out of the headlines,
right,
and now I think it's more of the fire hose idea, where it's like, okay, just let them go crazy about this and people will forget in 3 days, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, well, our attention spans are too short for this, and it almost is, you know, playing off that a little bit, and then they're like, you know, it was in the news once, and as long as we can, you know, slow roll this investigation, it should be fine. It also is a funny amount of confidence to put in your veteran homicide detective to think we can't keep Norris on this, he'll solve the crime.
Yeah, well, that's the fun part of The Wire. It's like they're doing this competent, like, complex idea of how to slow this investigation down, but it's based on assumptions that are, like, completely wrong. So, like, they're doing you know, they're doing all this work to try and get through the plan without acknowledging the fact that the plan is based on, like, a total fallacy, which is that this guy who's the supposedly, you know, veteran investigator is going to be somehow better at solving the crime than Kima would, which doesn't seem to hold true based on everything else we know about the department.
Yeah. Yeah. But the final prank is on the entire homicide unit, in that now Kima is the one who's going to be in charge of this investigation. And they're not, well, at least Jay Landsman is not happy about that.
I like the way that he intimidated her in that scene, which is that he just came up and basically put his belly on her.
Yeah. That's his go-to move. It's just like, look how fucking fat I am. Oh, I love him so much.
So another thing. So when you played that clip of them, the Mr. Lion scene, I didn't notice it the first two times I watched it, but the lady cop who thinks McNulty is a snack was in the background. We hadn't seen her for a while. But.
Oh. Yeah. She shows up in the background of a lot of different scenes at the homicide unit, which it's amazing to me that there was, like, certain actors who were there who they get called in and they don't have any speaking lines, but they're series regular background people, which I mean, that's a fucking cool job.
That's a great gig,
dude. I would love that gig. Are you kidding me? Just being in the fucking background of Game of Thrones as guy with sword. Mm-hmm. And just being like, I'm guy with sword. I'd probably talk a lot.
Guy who ogles Khaleesi. That would
Whoa.
Yeah, but what if you're like the guy who has, like, you know, the piss bucket? I mean, it's not.
I'm okay with that. I'll drag around a piss bucket. I would just, like, insist at some point I get to say, oh, I got a bucket of piss. And then, you know, hopefully I get paid for that.
Hello, Emmy.
Hello, Emmy. On the other side, is that Brent Flyberg, producer of Potty Shelf The Wire?
Yeah, I got to go empty a piss bucket. So we should take a break for ads. It'd be a good time for that.
Okay, he's right. Everyone has to empty their piss buckets and their shit buckets. So while we're doing that, please listen to these very good ads for very good and important products. And stick around because we will be right back.
Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? Not like around, you know, the block or whatnot. I'm not saying have you seen, run into him at your local grocery store. I'm saying, have you seen what his body looks like? He is still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. And what's even more shocking is he somehow looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, and yes, I have started drinking it. Why? Because they sent me some. And honestly, I've never felt better. My digestion is smoother, my body looks leaner, and I have energy all day. I feel younger, even though I am a young man. I feel even younger, bro. Like, if you know anything about me, you know that I'm someone who is obsessed with gut health, all right? You know, I drink kombucha. I like a probiotic drink. I do all sorts of things to make sure that my gut is healthy. And I'll tell you, this is actually great for your gut. And it actually tastes good, which is not something you can say about kombucha. Let's be honest. And another thing I loved about it, easy to prepare. I love that it's just something you just mix with water and stir. I didn't have to, like, you know, learn to make a culture from a SCOBY or whatever. Like, I just had to buy some Morning Kick, mix it with water, stir it, drink it down. And it tasted great. So if you want something that tastes good, makes your digestion feel smoother, and make your body look leaner and give you more energy, try Morning Kick. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. On the other side of the show, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with good old Marlo. Let's talk about Marlo a little bit. The Marlo storyline in this is... Oh, I'm sorry, you go ahead. Please tell me.
I was just going to comment extemporaneously about the actor who plays Marlo. He's just such it's underrated how much having just an interesting face and presence can improve an acting performance.
100%.
He's just a weirdly shaped guy, and it really, really works for this character.
Yeah, he's got alien proportions to his face, which
and body. You don't see it that often. But in this episode where you see him like walking around, you're like, man, that is just an interesting shaped proportion guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's not to say he's not very handsome, because he's incredibly handsome, but he's handsome in the way that I think I appreciate more than anything, which is a weird type of handsome, like a strange, he's not like a classically good looking guy. He's like so weird looking that you're just like, oh, okay, he's kind of hot.
He's got Willem Dafoe hotness.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe hot, you know. But yeah, there is, as you talked about, there is a poker motif going on here. We got a little bit of dual poker action. We open the episode with Marlo at a poker game with some friends. We don't know who they are, but I guess we assume that they are people who both have a lot of money and are comfortable enough with Marlo that they would invite that fucking psychopath to play poker with them. And the amazing thing about his poker game is that he is playing an honest poker game,
right,
with all of them, while on the other side you have Royce calling poker games that are basically fundraising poker games, but without, they don't say it, they don't call it that.
I was curious about this. Like, I know David Simon loves to, especially with his politicians, he's doing a lot of like historical referencing. Yeah. Is there any history of like this like card game as like fundraising, or is that just like something that
not that I've seen? I'm sure David got it from some local reporting. It was probably a Martin O'Malley thing or something. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, it's I mean, usually, I mean, there's a lot of poker playing in politics. Truman's famous for it, but I don't think he was ever, you know, using it to skim money.
Yeah,
it's smart. Maybe David Simon was coming up with like a new idea, right, for politicians there.
It's a smart idea, because as far as I can tell from my limited knowledge of like campaign finance law, I assume that the only reason that you would do this is because in order to get over the legal amount that you're allowed to, you know, contribute, yeah, to a campaign, you just call a poker game with the city developers and all the people, you know, who would be essentially paying you off. And you just, you win at gambling.
Whereas now, I think it's not even needed now. I mean, again, no. I know barely more than you maybe on this, but it's, you could just have, you know, a million different packs and,
right,
related committees that do your work for you.
Right, yeah, it exactly seems like the main thing that we found out now is that all of the money was much more blatant than anybody gave it credit, yeah, for, where it was just like, oh yeah, this guy just bought Clarence Thomas's wife right, a house or whatever, and paid, you know, three times over asking randomly, and nobody said anything.
Right. The there is like no more pretense anymore.
No.
It's just kind of it's out and out, if not just straight up, you know, super PAC dark money.
That's kind of why you have to respect George Santos, because he's kind of just like, you know what, I don't even have to use a real name. Right? I'm just gonna have a completely
fake all of this,
yeah,
and people will be okay with it, because I'll be like, but I'm on red team.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
and, exactly, and again, right, you thought there would be some sort of reckoning coming there, because it was just so obvious. It was like, oh, this is the moment where we like figure out that this is bad, because this guy like took it too, yeah, far. And like this episode of The Wire is all about, it feels like they're setting up Marlo to like, oh, he's taking it too far, because that's what we see in fiction, is like when, mm-hmm, the bad guys, right, you know, they overreach. But then in real life, when someone overreached, we just sort of forgot about it after a while.
Yeah, we just go, I didn't know you could do that and not feel shame. Like, I thought there were rules. It's Air Bud over and over again. It's just like, there's nowhere in the rules does it say you know a dog can't play basketball. Nowhere in the rules does it say you have to resign if you lie over and over and over again about the most insane shit. And I think in a way the show is a bit of a time capsule, in which like, you know, there is a pretense of like, oh, in order to get this money he's got to play this poker game,
right,
you know? Oh, in order to, you know, get elected, he's gonna have to watch out for that bad headline. And nowadays it's just like, I don't know if anything matters anymore other than a team affiliation. Mm-hmm. So you see Marlo you know, at this poker game and losing, and then so at first I'm thinking, oh, he's a good guy, and then not that he's a good guy, but I guess like, oh, look at
he's
that
he's willing to play by some rules.
He's
some
willing rules. To play, yeah. Yes, yeah, and he's willing to lose lots and lots of money and not resort to violence. Like, he understands this is how the game works, and mm-hmm, he's just going to continue gambling and trying to win.
It's never just like with the homicide cops. It's never stated outright that the guys he's playing poker with are like old head gangsters that maybe were in the game and got out of it. Right. But that was kind of what I
assumed. Had to be, right? I mean, that was my assumption because I'm like, well, who else has that much money and would hang out with Marla?
And who else would be playing at that game and that you know,
right?
Nondescript building.
Exactly. Yeah. Who else has six
figures to lose at a poker game in an abandoned row house?
Just throwing away town car money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But then he later goes into a local liquor store and he punks the security guard by stealing some lollipops. And the security guard comes up to him and, you know, tells him, hey, that was fucked up. I'm a man. And Marlo, tells him it's supposed to be, you want it to be one way, but it's another way. I have a clip of that. And enjoy.
The fuck?
You want it to be one way. You want it to be one way.
What?
You want it to be one way.
I ain't disrespecting you, son.
You want it to be one way.
You think I dream of coming to work up in this shit on a Sunday morning?
You want it to be one way.
Sorry. Stop saying that.
You want
it to be... Man, stop!
I knew you were going to do this.
But it's the other way.
What?
I'm so sorry. You know, it's just I get bored and I just want to make a clip and then I just do that. Anyways, he wants it to be one way, but it's the other way. That's the point of that scene. And I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. Any like theories is what he's talking about?
I mean, I've always thought it was like it's about expectations and reality, right? And so this is Marlowe's worldview of you all have these fancy dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the cold reality. And so it fits in with the whole co-op plan, right? They have this fancy plan that's going to make everyone come together and be united. And he sees himself as kind of a cold-hearted realist.
Yeah. No, I feel that.
This is like Carcetti with Hamsterdam, too, where it's like, oh, yeah, you wanted it to be this way. But I got to play the game that exists now.
I think that's 100% right. It is like it's him, you know, being he is a cold-hearted realist for sure. There is also part of me that thinks that in that scene, you know, he's yelling at Marlo and he's telling him like, you know, I know what you are and I'm not stepping to you, but I am a man. And then he like gets in close and then Marlo gets in close back at him and he's like, I told you I'm not stepping to you. And part of me is like, well, you're kind of literally stepping to him.
Yeah,
right
he's
now.
Doing the thing that Naaman's doing, where he's like, "No, I'm just saying." Yeah, right. All right, but but there's no difference between.
Yeah, and a part of me is like, I know you want it to be one way in which you get to say whatever the fuck you want to me, and then say, "But I'm not stepping to you." But it's the other way in which I'm going to kill you later, which is what happens, and that is like for me was when I was like. I was just beginning to like Marlo, you know, I was just beginning to accept him. And then he goes and kills a random civilian for talking back. And I was, I can't abide that. I don't like it. And it's mean. that's my biggest problem with, you know, most, gangsters is they're so mean. But then, he gets a little bit of comeuppance in this episode. Oh, I'm sorry. But before he gets his comeuppance.
I do think there's a bit of like a Mandela effect thing going on with that line. Because in my head, it was said all as one phrase. You want it to be one way, but it's the other way. But then you rewatch it and you realize like there's a lot of like in between stuff happening between those lines. But I don't know. I don't know if you did it the same, but my brain sort of put them together artificially.
Well, they are together, but he keeps repeating, you want it to be one way. And the guy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Stop saying that. He doesn't do it as many times as I did in that re-edit, sure. But he does it. Yeah. And then Chris pulls up and he goes, but it's the other way. So in the previous episode, we see old face Andre get robbed at his at the bodega that he owns. And there's a great scene in this episode in which old face comes to the rim shop where Marlo hangs and tries to reason with him about this robbery. And he does it by trying to present himself as the NASDAQ after 9/11. And I have a clip of that.
Motherfuckers, just blowing up shit just too. Don't care who get hurt, what kind of sense it makes.
You got a point.
And the government, right? They have one of them terrorist attacks. They cut Delta, whoever, some slack. The insurance companies, the banks, the whole NASDAQ and shit. Get some time to pay back what they owe, because the government know ain't nothing they could do.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know you see it. You see the big picture. Probably with niggas today, they only see the narrow view.
It's nice.
It got some sentimental values.
I ain't much for sentiment.
Oh, you know. It's been a while since I checked. I mean, the fluctuation in the global economy and all.
I'll find out for you.
You don't have to.
I'll find out for you.
Fingers swelled over the years.
Need some help?
Yeah, man. You need help?
Nah, I got it. I got it.
Maybe use some spit.
I don't want the man spit.
Nah, I got it now.
Omar ain't no terrorist. You just another nigga with a gun. And you ain't no Delta Airlines neither. You just a nigga got your shit took. So bring me what you owe and talk that global economy mess somewhere else.
I want more of that. I think I'll say that. I like that entire scene is so fucking funny to me.
Do we ever know where Old Face Andre got the name? Like, was he like six and called Old Face Andre? Or
I just looking at him, I know where Old Face Andre got the name. You know, and it's I gotta say, it's a pretty apt like nickname, because he does look like. He does have kind of an older face for how old, like he's probably 25. And, you know, that's my guess. I just love that scene. Just watching him trying to use the global economy in order to, and 9/11 as a reason why maybe he could, get the next package fronted because he got it stolen by Omar.
I like that they're doing an understated David Mamet overlapping dialogue thing, but they're not like, they're not really hammering it. So it's just, it's there, but it's not like so self-conscious. And then, and then the ring is like the jacket in The Sopranos where, you know, it's like everybody's like, oh, look at that ring. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Everybody
nice
notices
ring.
It. Yeah.
We first see that ring, Old Face is hiding it from Omar because he doesn't want to get it jacked when, you know, he's getting the package jacked. And now, of course, fucking Marlo's taking it.
Also understated joke that you would have like a giant bejeweled ring and you're like, oh yeah, it has a sentimental value.
Sentimental value, yeah.
Yeah, from when I won the Super Bowl. And then that ring, which Old Face, you know, tried to, in many ways, to keep, including, oh, my man, my fingers are so fat now, I can't get it off. And I love that the implication of, do you need help? Is like, I will literally cut your finger off to get that ring. He tried so hard to keep it and keep it away from Omar. But then Omar gets a little present from Prop Joe. In this episode, you see Prop Joe trying to get Marlo to join the co-op. So he goes to his pigeon coop and is like, if you like coops, you'll love a co-op.
And, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, I'm very smart.
That's weird. I actually, I watched it twice. Didn't even occur to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a genius. But, Marlo sees no reason to join the co-op. No one fucks with him now. And he doesn't care about the East Side. So he's like, no, I don't care.
I mean, I didn't know how to interpret that handshake at the end of the scene at first. Like, I didn't realize, like, the handshake. Yeah. No. I thought the handshake was, like, it implied yes, but I guess it's not.
He said, no one fucks with me now. He's like, yeah. You know, this is the point of the co-op is, you know, we all help each other out in case anyone fucks with us. And he's like, no one fucks with me, so I don't need your, I don't need your help.
That handshake was, I said, good day, sir.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It is good day. Yeah. And Prop Joe, of course, says, all right, well, now we got to get someone to fuck with him. So he uses
like Marlo's
Omar.
Overreaching, but then also Prop Joe's like overreaching.
Yeah.
And Omar's overreaching a little bit. You feel like everybody's on dangerous footing here.
Everyone's got their hands in each other's pockets. And that is, I think, pointed out pretty literally with the ring. The ring is passing owner to owner. And the way it's the, you know, mirrors the way that money moves. It's, you know, money don't have no owners. It just has spenders. Mm-hmm. Prop Joe tells Omar, I know of a little card game where you can make some money. And Omar does it, robs the card game for him. And I've got that clip as well.
House.
All right, bud, let me see them hands, yo.
I don't know about cars, but I think these 4-5s be the full house. Hey,
I got to say, the fact that he was sitting back there listening to the card game and he heard Marlo say full house, he's just like, "Ooh, I got a line for that now I love this about Omar. Is he's the only character where I truly will suspend all disbelief to allow him to say cool shit.
Like saying cool shit is clearly his entire reason for being. So you're right. If that's what gets him off, that makes sense.
And if it means more Omar for me, then I'm happy. Mm-hmm.
Yo, banker, cash me out, yo.
It's my money.
Man, money ain't got no owners. Only spenders. I tell you something else. I like that ring, too. Boy, you got me confused when a man repeats himself.
This ain't over.
Well, that's how you carrying the shorty. Huh?
Because I can find your peoples a whole lot easier than they can find me.
Wear it in health.
No doubt.
Wear it in health, guys.
L'chaim.
Yeah, I like that. To life. That's great. Yeah, I do feel like wear it in health sounds like something people say, but I don't think I've ever heard it. But I like it because it sounds so civilized. It sounds so, I don't know, there's something fancy
genteel,
about it.
Genteel, yeah.
Genteel, yeah. That ring is now Omar's ring and the money as well. So we'll see what happens with Marlo and see if Prop Joe's
even
plan works
for
out.
Omar, like robbing a card game full of drug dealers so comfortable that they've like made it to old age and can spend six figures on a card game doesn't seem like the smartest move.
No.
Seems like a gamble even for him.
I mean, I do feel like he is someone who takes those risks and they seem to pay off, so I don't see him stopping anytime, you know? So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the schools. And what's going on with them kids? So this is a heavily Randy focused episode. Randy is the little one who he's the entrepreneur of the bunch. He is the one who skips out on class so he can sell candy to sixth graders. And this is an episode in which we kind of like start his arc of him being Randy the snitch. And he is, you know, he gets caught and for selling candy. He gets taken to Mrs. Donnelly's office, and Donnelly does a great job doing what police do, which is
David Simon loves his symmetries.
I mean, that's what he's doing. Just saying, well, now that I've got you here, I will pin a crime on you unless you give me a name. And Randy, of course, does you know, says who's tagging the wall. Thoughts on the storyline, Vince?
You know, it's good. I am sort of fascinated by more by the Michael storyline, because you kind of see where it's going, especially if you know that Dennis Lehane wrote the script for this episode. Because boy, does Dennis Lehane ever love sexual abuse? And you're like, I think I smell some classic Dennis Lehane stuff coming in this season.
Yeah, I mean, so you see Michael sparingly in this episode, but every scene with him is pretty potent. Between him and Cuddy is the boxing instructor, and he's trying to get close to Michael, mostly because he sees the potential that Michael has as a boxer. But Michael is clearly, you know, he's got some history of not trusting men for whatever reason. They don't really explain it. But I think you can guess by the way he moves away from Cuddy when Cuddy's like, you know, touching, like puts his elbow on his shoulder like a, you know, like a pal. And he's and he like backs away. And then Cuddy takes him to a boxing match and feels the need to
see. You didn't think that news story about Mark Foley asking the kid whether he was in his boxers was relevant, but now it's all coming together for you.
Yeah. They are boxers. Think about it.
Whoa. That actually, I didn't get that. But yeah, I mean, watching the Michael storyline in this episode is interesting, because you're just like, there's so much inferred, like so much implied without actually saying it. And I think like that is one of the strengths of the show, is the ability to like take a, you know, something really dramatic and be like, if we spell it out, we don't, you know, it's a show don't tell type thing. You know?
I also think it is like a little bit of like wish fulfillment in fiction, where like every mentor in fiction, you're like, ah, why does this kid hate me? Why can't I reach these kids? And in fiction, you can actually like write an answer to that question. Whereas in real life, you probably just like go on like, well, I guess that kid thinks I'm a piece of shit. Oh, well.
Yeah.
You may never actually find out the answer.
Yeah. But it's cool. I mean, they show, you know, you get glimpses here of Michael being almost an adult, right? He takes care of Bug. He's setting up with his homework. He knows he likes math. Got the drink. Take care of him where the mom is useless on the couch. And then a very scared little kid. You know, he doesn't go to the boxing match unless he knows the other kid is already going.
Right.
As soon as he's out the van, he's out the van too. He doesn't want to be alone with a grown-up under any circumstances. Like, he's really kind of terrified. So it's – but again, both parts are done really kind of almost impressionistically. It's really brilliant.
Yeah, and it's like it's hard to watch too, knowing the future. Like, once you've seen the show, you know, a lot of these kids' storylines really fuck with you, because you know, I think for anyone
who's
watching,
has a hard time watching Dookie. Like, she like gets sad because she wants to adopt him, and everybody's mean to him for no reason. And
that's the most infuriating part of the kids' storyline. Not the spoiler alert, but
yeah,
the one kid who gets out, who gets a good place, is the one kid who shouldn't.
Right. Yeah.
So it's Neymar.
It's the most privileged of the entire group.
He wins the Bunny Colvin sweepstakes, right?
I know.
You're going to go with Bunny Colvin, not Neymar, not Dookie, who's incredibly smart, Randy, who's a hustler, not Michael, who's got the life story of tragedy. No, it's the privileged kid of the gangbanger.
Why? The one with the least survival skills, I think.
Right?
And I think that is almost part of it, where it's just like, you know, if there's one thing you could say about the end of the season, or the end of, you know, the storylines for all the kids on The Wire, is they do all live. So I don't think that's the case if Bunny Colvin decides to adopt any other one. You know what I mean? Like, Naaman'd was going to die if he did not get extracted by a policeman. It's just watching Michael's storyline is crazy, you know, in retrospect, because you're just, yeah, you're seeing a very responsible kid who is trying not to be used in whatever way by adults around him. And, you know, whether it's his parents, whether it's his teachers or Cuddy, he's trying to like make it on his own. And you see his fatal flaw, which is that he really had some sexual abuse stuff going on, and that's going to play into his life of crime later. but let's also talk a little bit about Bunny. No, let's see. What happened with Bunny? Bunny takes a job as the truancy officer,
which is one of my favorite.
Cuddy takes a job.
We're talking about Bunny. Okay. Well, Bunny.
Either way.
Bunny's observing the middle school, trying to see who he's going to take under his wing. Coming in, and you know, you get that scene with Cuddy's ex-girlfriend, who sort of lays it out for him, like what it's like teaching these kids.
Yeah.
The best part is that you see Bunny is suited to the school system because he just recognizes it's another failed urban institution, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
just like he can navigate the police department, he goes, no, the institution hasn't failed these kids.
Yes.
These are the trouble ones that are going to be out of the institution later on, so we're going to try to track them now before they get out. It's not your fault.
Yes.
It's their fault. Yeah.
I loved that so much.
All of and all of the waivers that he has to sign. It's like, yes, you can give us lots of money, but only if you sign all of these things that says that we are not
indemnify us from any responsibility for you or anything that happens to you. No, I love the scene where he's meeting with Miss Conway, and the academic is like doing some of the talking, and Bunny stops him to be like, just so you know, the institutions are great. There's no way have you failed the children. No. That's some other shit. Don't worry about that. But the point, it's like he has learned through years and years of being, playing politics as a police major that, you know, you have to go on with the pretense of, oh no, the institution's great. Maybe just needs a little tweak here and there. There's no need to tear down any of this. You've certainly have not failed these kids. They're all doing great. But yeah, that's so Bunny is, he's looking around and he's seeing, this is where he's going to be, spending the rest of the season. Cuddy is, like you said, a truancy officer, and he's going around collecting kids. Sherrod is running away from school, even though he shows up to school and tells Bubbles that he's going to go. He just can't sit still.
My favorite part of the Cuddy storyline is that he goes into the job with Marsha Donnelly, and she's just like, who's that? Oh, I don't know, just some convicted murderer that I hired to chase down kids. A priest said he was cool.
A deacon, sir. It shows the power of the ministerial class in Baltimore that it's just like word from a deacon.
Deacon, tell me more about this this young man. Well, so he's a convicted murderer. Yeah, okay, yeah. Former gangbanger. And what does he do in his spare time? He has a gym in an abandoned warehouse where he hangs out with young boys.
Let's get
him.
Oh, young boys. Oh, I'm gonna need him to find more young boys.
Yes. He's really turned his life around. Now he punches 13-year-olds.
To
teach him lessons.
But he really has changed, and honestly, he's a great choice for a truancy officer. Everyone has a past, Vince.
Right. Sorry, the one storyline that I wanted to get to before we dive too deeply into this was, like, I've always found Carcetti to be just a fascinating character because I do think they set up the fact that he was going to be essentially out for himself. But like, there's a big arc in this episode where we allow ourselves to be convinced that he's going to be like a different kind of politician and that he's caring. And because, and I feel like this was just really impressive because this was like 2 years before Barack Obama. Like it, it showed us being sort of seduced by someone on like sheer charisma and homework doing alone. Like the whole George W. Bush era was just like, oh man, how do we get into this mess? Oh, we elected a stupid guy. Now all we have to do is elect like a smart guy who talks good.
Right.
And that's going to be like the cure all. And even like rewatching the show, you like, you let yourself be seduced by Carchetti, like doing the right things and just like saying the right things. And I think like the same way it does with Marlo, where he doesn't really become bad until he gets like a certain amount of power. And then he starts to overreach. Like Carchetti's good throughout this arc because he has no shot at winning and he knows it. Whereas once he actually has power and has to hold on to it, that's where he sort of becomes, you know, Littlefinger.
And what I like about it is I also have the feeling like watching the show the first time around where, again, I was like, he's good.
Yeah. They
he's
just
good
elected and he's going to do Carchetti guy. If they weren't just like so busy just voting for the black guy, like
then we see how good this white guy is.
But for affirmative action.
Yeah, goddamn woke police. Carchetti in this episode goes to the ministers, and he knows he's not going to win them over, but he goes there just to basically kiss the ring to pay his respect and to, you know, give him a little bit of the old charm. And I have a clip of that.
Ask for your vote now. Maybe I haven't earned it yet, but I am here to say that when I am mayor, my door is open to you regardless of who you endorse. And I want you to remember that I came here today to say these things. Thank you.
Councilman, thank you for coming.
So looking at that scene from a couple of different angles, like originally I was like, good for him for, you know, he might be, maybe he is a voice of change. Maybe he is good. And then, you know, watching the show and realizing that the Carchetti character is basically about like how politically strategic he is and how smart he is at winning elections, not at how he's going to be as someone who's governing, you know, and I think this is the grand thing with, you know, parallel with Obama is that like, while he was running, you don't see him as like, man, this guy's really good at winning elections. You know, he's really good at winning my vote. It's like you see him as like, this guy's going to change things. This guy's going to, you know, be a different type of politician. Right. He's going to do all these things. And it's only, you know, with hindsight that you realize like, no, this is absolutely about political strategy. It's about making you believe that this is going to be someone who's going to be a voice of change.
Well, we see that when, you know, he talks to Reg Cathy, the campaign advisor before this about why to go. They're going to endorse Royce. They're in his pocket, but it's about limiting the damage they do between now and election day, right? What are they going to say in the pulpits the Sunday before?
Right.
And so the talk is all about what I'm going to do as mayor, but the subtext is really, this is all about getting to be mayor, and I'm going to, you know, mute your criticisms of me with a very sincere sounding, but very cynical and self-serving pitch about being the mayor for all people.
Yes.
Yeah. I also feel like there's a little bit of Biden in here too. Just I've heard Biden describe, I think it was Chapo. They called him like, he's the guy who tells you the ice cream machine is broken. And like, this is a very like, Carchetti is the guy who's just like, he's good at like delivering bad news humbly, like sort of, you know, being like, yes, this is an intractable problem and I have no way to fix it, but you know, I commiserate with how much it sucks right now.
I love ice cream, you love ice cream.
Yeah, my family loves ice cream. You know, and it's sort of what Carchetti's doing here, where it's like, I'm not telling you that I'm really going to do anything necessarily, but I'm you're gonna find me honest because I'm going to acknowledge my own impotence in this situation.
You know what this makes me realize? As I was watching that scene, it made me really wish that Bernie Sanders had seen that scene and maybe could have visited South Carolina once and met with James Clyburn and been like, listen, I know you don't like me. I'm a loud mouth, okay? I know you're not going to vote for me, but maybe tone it down a little bit, just a tiny bit, okay? I love you. I kiss the ring. We're all friends, you know. But he didn't. He didn't do that, and that was, I think, a huge mistake. And it's like the annoying thing about, like, watching a show like this and realizing how much of the Carchetti storyline is about, you know, running a good campaign is that you watch it and you're like, this is the only people, like, Obama loved the show, and I guarantee that part of that love was watching Carchetti doing something that I think Obama did a lot of, which is like, he knew how to run, he knew how to get elected to stuff. And that's not a criticism, but it is like something where I watch it and I go that. Like, why can't Bernie learn from this? Why does it have to be someone who's that interested in power? Why can't it be? Not that Bernie isn't interested in power, but I feel like he had too much pride and he was like, oh, I'm not going to win there. Why would I go? And it just was. And so instead of having, you know, maybe a more fair turnout, you know, instead it was just Biden's our man in South Carolina. And it all kind of went downhill from there. R.I.P. these are Matt's thoughts about Bernie losing in 2020. Okay.
It is great to be here to talk about The Wire with you guys.
Just gotta let Matt cook sometimes.
Just sometimes you gotta let me cook. But yeah, that is most of the stuff that happens is in this episode. Do we have a favorite, least favorite, or favorite scene, least favorite scene, or scene we didn't talk about, Vince?
Yeah, that's an easy one. We didn't talk about it, but I think this was Snoop's first use of that sound that she makes. And yeah. Like, I had to pause it because just the way that she deployed that was... I can't do it.
Yes. No, I do. I do have that that scene. It's between Bodie and Chris and Snoop.
What's the play? Well, I told little Kevin right there to shoot y'all both in the head twice, but seeing that he done walked away.
Oh, you funny.
Yeah. I guess I'm on your package.
Yeah. I love Yerp. And this is, I started making a list as I was rewatching the season. Of all the, she has about four different versions of, yeah! And I've, you know what? Next episode, I'm gonna add it to the soundboard, every single type of yerp she does, because they are, they're brilliant and they're useful, because it's like it's a sound. If you hear it, you're like, oh, bring the drugs, you know.
you should mix some of yarp from Hot Fuzz too.
Oh, yeah. I'll add the Hot Fuzz yarp as well.
I feel like, you know how they have a different version of animal sounds, like in every language, like in English, yeah. You know, roosters say cock-a-doodle-doo, but it, whatever.
In French, it's cocorico.
Yeah, cocorico, yeah. That's right, yeah. And dogs in Spanish go guau, guau. Which I'm like, I guess they go guau, guau.
Like, I want the Snoop's yerp sound to go out in every language to see, like, Slovenian take on
like,
yerp.
I'm going to an umlaut over the U.
Yeah. Yerp. Next time I will listen to it. And don't they have like what is it, like when you can change the language on the
Google
settings?
Translate.
I'm gonna see if I can change the language on the next rewatch of it and see if that Europe works. Kevin, was there any scene, a favorite scene or a least favorite scene or something else you wanted to talk about?
I mean, the Andre, the old face Andre scene is a good one.
Yeah.
What we haven't talked about, I guess the fact that McNulty's barely in this,
Yeah.
I mean, and this goes back to your theory about being drunk as a superpower. This is when he's sober.
That's right.
And he's not there. We do get the so-so gift, which is good. And we get, you know, it's always fun to see drunk Bunk. So,
Oh, Puss Eye.
Dude, so that is my favorite scene of the episode. It is the most, it's another, like, well-written banger. It's perfect. It's two police partners who are just not right for each other. You know, one is too hard-boiled. The other one is too horny to live.
Yes.
Well, I think that's a funny, because this episode, there's so much, like, about the, you know, the notes that they're not playing. But, like, Lester's being all judgmental, and you're like, didn't you just wife up the stripper last season?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
to talk about going after young girls?
Yeah, true. You make a good point. He is a hypocrite.
He's smooth Lester Freeman. You cannot be mad at smooth Lester Freeman.
Exactly.
He's the greatest character in The Wire. He's the pinnacle.
Hands down. He's the best detective, and he's just the greatest character. And I love watching him and Bunk together just talking past each other.
Yeah.
It is so fucking brilliant. And when Bunk realizes it, he just starts yelling out for Jimmy. <He's> like, oh man, what the fuck? Jimmy, I'm horny. I have that scene. It is my favorite.
Boy Marlon. I thought he was skewing, man.
Screwing what?
The boy's a young lion.
Hello, is Mr. Lion home?
And a lion has to have his kid.
Bet they probe for Mr. Lion.
So then where are my bodies? Here I am over here on the one hand without a body in 6 months, and here you are looking for a suspect who's most likely dead, and most likely for dropping one of Marlon's. And again, if he's dead, where's that body?
You know what the plural of pussy is? Puss eye. Jimmy taught me that.
Where's he putting the bodies, Bunk, huh? In the sewers? Road funeral home, maybe?
Yeah, they teach that fancy-ass Latin at them Catholic schools.
You remember that? Now, for West Side boy like Marlo Stanfield, that would be the traditional dumping ground.
Hey, girl.
Right?
Hey, girl.
Right?
What?
Man.
Jimmy! Jimmy! Trying to get some...
Well, that's how you
die. I just love that scene so much. They're so perfect. For they're the odd couple, you know. They just
also everybody just happily smoking in a bar in 2006.
Yeah, those are the.
I love he's got the highball glass and the cigar.
Yeah,
he's can't quite control them both. Yes.
Yeah.
Just blowing kisses to two young strangers while his partner is literally doing the work for him. Like, this is what if Freeman's second day back at homicide, and he's just like, I think I've figured out that there are bodies somewhere. And Bunk is, he just wants to get his dick sucked. But yeah, that is by far my favorite scene. I also love that he feels the need to credit McNulty with inventing puss eye.
Yes.
You know, the plural of pussy is puss eye. McNulty taught me that. Just starts crying for his friend. But that's the episode. That's what happens in it. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, out of all the letter grades I could give it, I think I would give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Genuine. This is genuinely a solid B+.
Oh, okay. B+. Surprise.
I mean, they all are, but this one is especially. This is the solid B+ of genuineness.
Okay.
In giving it a solid B+.
Sure. Kevin, what would you give this episode?
Well, my experience as a grader, I mean, it's not as elite as an A-, but it's not as average as a B, so I'd probably come down, I guess, in the middle at a B+.
Okay, all right. That's a solid. It's a solid B+ episode of The Wire, and you know what? A solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire. Kevin Cruz, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, talking The Wire with us.
My pleasure. Hey, I'm going to be at the Punchline in San Francisco on October 17th. So be sure to come check me out, all right?
Yeah,
if you love history and you love Kevin, please come October 17th, Punchline.
Two drink minimum.
For me,
Kevin, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on whatever Elon Musk has called Twitter today, unless he's destroyed it. And I have a Substack, kevinmcruz.substack.com.
Okay, so check those out immediately. Kevin, it was a pleasure having you.
If you're driving, don't check them out immediately. Please pull over. I don't want to.
Nope. It's good. I want you to read the Substack while you're driving.
All right, you heard him, folks.
That way, your Patreon, if you die, it'll keep going until someone notices.
Ooh, well done. Okay, I like it. Good, good, good.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you. You're the best.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Wires. Patreon.com/fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, this week we have merely three shout outs to give.
Man,
that's three street names.
So in street name mode that I thought like our first patron was named Merely, and I was like, I was already brainstorming a nickname for
Merely.
Merely, yeah.
And listen, Merely would be a great name. It would be a name that I know and I recognize. You know, I mean, I've never heard of a Merely before, but it would be something I'd understand. But I'll tell you right now, there's a couple names here that I don't understand. First,
yeah, there's
is,
no requirement that you give real names on Patreon.
Yeah, so when
so
you
if
make,
anybody's on the fence because of that,
right? So like, yeah, if you are making a Patreon. You know, people sometimes they'll just make a username, and which is fine, but it also makes like shouting you out, like I'm happy to shout out your username, but making a street name out of it is kind of hard. So this first one is Cixerino, Crixerino,
Crixerino, more like Mixerino. We call this guy, and I assume it's a guy because it's not Crixerina.
That's true. Good point.
Yeah, we're gonna call him the bartender.
I love it. That's the fact that you got a nickname out of that is very good.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is just one name, and it's SKJE, Sky.
That's Sky. Yeah, that's Sky. That's Eastern European pronunciation rules, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, Sky.
Sky. Blue Sky. We call this guy Blueface.
Or
girl.
Blueface. That's very good. I like that. That's the name of a rapper, too.
Oh, there you go. I didn't even know that.
Well, then how'd you get Blueface?
Sky Blue?
I know, but that's amazing that you from there.
Well,
you,
Old Face Andre, Blueface Sky. Yeah, you know. I
you
don't know.
Accidentally came up with the name of a very famous rapper named Blueface.
There
he
kind
of raps offbeat. It's a weird thing, but it's like once you get used to it, it's pretty good. And last but not least, Felipe Jensen.
Felipe Jensen. We call this guy Dr. J.
Okay, Dr. J. Felipe Jensen. You know, Blueface, and of course the bartender. We thank you so much for your patronage. And if you want a street name, patreon.com/rockcast, $8 tier.
But that means Felipe is kind of like Spanish influence. Maybe it should be Dr. Ye.
Okay, that's good too. Let's do it.
You know,
we're changing midstream.
I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback my own nicknames from now on.
Yeah, I kind of like it. You know, it's kind of fun.
Dr. Ye.
So yeah, get yourself a nickname. Who knows? You might get two because Vince Monday morning quarterbacks himself.
That's right.
It'll be great for you and also great for everyone because you know what? Not only you get a name, but you also get all these Fraudcast bonus episodes every week. Me and Vince talking about other things.
That's right.
Fraudcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the googly voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening, and I hope you're enjoying whatever song is playing in your ear right now. I bet it's good. And you know what? Until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
I cannot write these that quickly. There's no help from Mancini. Brent Flyberg's busy working. But I got all the song for you pigs. Old Faces Ring is large and shiny, and he hides it when he gets jacked by Omar. string gets stolen by Marlo Stanfield, who says he'll get it appraised. But will he see it again? Andre compares himself to Delta and Omar to Al Qaeda. Watches him talking. He sees the game he's playing. His strange cat eyes too far apart. What a wild ass bow they appear. Old faces ring is taken by Marlo, who takes it to his poker game. But it gets stolen again. It gets stolen. What up, bitch? My name is Dave Matthews. I'm a band called Dave Matthews. I'm from South Africa and I am white and I'm okay with that. That's fine. Sucky my fuck, play the song and lucky luck, lum that butthole. Old faces ring. Just keeps getting stole. Old faces ring has its own season arc, and I'll follow it throughout season four. I wrote this song in under an hour. Would have been 5 minutes if I just wrote less words. Old faces ring was a central.
Spasming muscle this whole time.
Your titty spasm?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Must be from doing all that vape.
No, that's a turd. Can't do it.
Wait, what happened?
I was gonna fart into the mic, but I realized like that's more than a fart.
Like, oh no, that's doo-doo. Oh no, it's doo-doo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.